Hello and welcome to Mysteries, Inc. I'm Spring.
I'm Joe.
And we are here to give you another episode of History, Mystery, Conspiracies, and Creatures. Yeah.
All right. Got to make a new theme song so Spring can showcase her vocal talents.
I'm never going to make it on American Idol, but at least I have here.
This is the platform for it. All right. So we're going to share some fun stories with you today, and if you are new to the show, we start off doing rock, paper, scissors to see who goes first.
And I have been, like...
You have been dominating. Although that's after, like, a really long winning spree for me, so...
All right.
I want to say it was months.
Shush.
All right.
All right.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Yes! Scissor! No.
Maybe I'm just forgetting and I do scissors every time. It's been a minute since we recorded. So all right. So yeah, sorry for the outage last week, but we got a little too busy.
Yeah.
Like, believe it or not, this is not our full time job.
It's a hobby, a labor of love.
All right. So Spring, what do you got for us?
I have one that I've titled "Leave the Child Luggage Behind," because.
Interesting.
It's got a moral to the story. History has taught me that if a woman of the past was independently wealthy, possessed land, or influence, she must have been in bed with the devil. Right?
Makes sense.
And in the case of Alice Keiteler, the sorceress of Kelkenny, they might have been closer to the truth than that assumption. So back to the beautiful country of Ireland, which I've been kind of like circling lately. And we find possibly the first account of a female serial killer, or a.k.a. Black Widow.
Ooh.
She was born to wealthy merchants in 1263, and she was a woman of great potential. She caught the eye of William Outlaw, and it's like with an E, so I'm assuming like Outlaw with like a silent E.
Interesting. So it's Louis.
It could be... Outlawi.
I don't know. No, I'm sounding more
French.
No, I was going to say Scottish. Utlu.
Well, they were married in 1280. And in their 20-year marriage, they only had one son, William Jr. And the world revolved around William Jr. as far as Alice was concerned. That was, her kid was the best. William Sr. passed away after leaving his banking business to his son and a substantial inheritance to his family. Alice was still young and held her beauty, so when it came to finding another suitor, she had no problems. Adam LeBlanc fell for the wealthy widow and married her. He thought it was such a good match since both had kids from previous relationships and both were independently wealthy. He thought it was like
an even thing.
Mm-hmm. And they had land too, so this was like a merger of amazingness. Adam was in the business of money lending and even once lent money to King Edward I, like in the total of like almost $1,000 or something, which is a lot of money back in the 1600s.
King's borrowing money from you, damn.
Yeah. So Alice and William Jr. were also grateful to have Adam join their lives, and Adam must have felt the same way because not only did he lend William Jr. $3,000, which is like millions by today's standards, he also changed his will and left William Jr. as his sole heir, much to the displeasure of his biological children.
Yeah.
Jr. buried the money in the yard and forgot about it. And he also forgot about paying back because it was a loan. But he just ended up, like, he didn't even need it for anything.
He just borrowed it just to bury it.
Buried it in the yard and left it. Right? The people in the town were not too big of fans of Alice and William because they thought, like, first she married well, you know, with with her William, and then after he passed away, she ended up with a lot of money and a lot of land, and like I said, women back then, they didn't like them being affluent, you know, on their own. Mm-hmm. So when she married Adam, people kind of were also like, wow, look at this. Found another wealthy man. And oh, now you're going to be part of his business. So they, one of these people was her own cousin who happened to be the sheriff of the village. And so one night they snuck onto the property and found the $3,000 in the yard. I don't know if like somebody, there was rumors about it being there or they were just really snooping around, but they found the $3,000, stole it, took it with themselves.
Damn.
When confronted about the money, the villagers said it was found in a treasure cove and items found in the ground were like automatically in the king's possession. So it couldn't be theirs. They had no way to prove it was theirs. So it was just a treasure that was left behind. Mm. Adam and Alice went to file a complaint with the police, but they were arrested for murder, plotting against the murder of William's father, William Sr.
What?
Well, both of the charges were all dropped and everything because Wealthy doesn't really prosecute Wealthy, you know. That's how it goes. But the pleasantries between them and the rest of the village did not improve, and in a short time, Adam passed away. Rumors and tempers were everywhere because Adam's biological kids had no idea that they were disinherited.
Mm.
Finding herself newly single in 1309, she set her sights on a wealthy knight named Richard de Laval. And just like every other husband, he fell into her love spell with Alice and William Jr. and changed his will to exclude all of his other like family members and just set it up for pattern. William. Yeah, and he also gave William power of attorney, which now allowed him to collect debts owed to the family.
Hmm.
In 1913, Richard passed away. So only 10 years. She wasn't like keeping them for very long.
I mean, that's not super quick. That's a decade.
And when it came time to figure out who gets what, one of Richard's biological children sued Alice for his part of his father's like wealth, but he lost. And she was going for her widow's dower, which equaled about a third of his vast land ownership. So not only did she have husband number one's money and mm-hmm. land, then she got husband number two's money and land, and now she just got at least a third of the land and all the money for her this one.
The knight.
Yeah, it seemed that every marriage left Alice more wealthy and powerful, and also seemed to be on the radar of locals for strange behavior. Love was not to leave Alice by herself for too long. Husband number four is named Sir John Lepore. Shortly after marriage, the normally healthy John was losing his hair. Mm-hmm. His finger and toenails were falling off, and he lost a whole bunch of weight. Some speculated that he was being slowly poisoned with arsenic, because that's kind of like the symptoms of arsenic poisoning. Mm-hmm. Things were going like clockwork up to the point when John's biological kids were notified they were taken out of their dad's will. They were pissed. They convinced that their father was under a spell of a witch. They went to a bishop of Ossory named Richard D. Ledreedy. I think it's Reedy because it's Reddy. Anyway, Ledreedy. Anyway, meh. An Englishman who hated everything that appeared to be heresy. Like, he was looking for a creature or a conspiracy or some kind of sinner. And he was like...
Who are rich or knew how to heal.
Witches! So, a little bit about Richard. Because I don't want to say his last name anymore, so we're just calling him Richard. That's it. This is the tricky dick. We got him.
I was going to say, yeah, dick for short.
He was a religious zealot who made his mission to take out any form of evil. And so when Sir John Lepore's kids came to him with accusations of their stepmother being a witch, Richard was ready for battle. He was ready to go. He needed to win the locals. He needed to win with the locals because he was only slightly more popular than Alice and William. Like, they would literally lock him out of his own, like, church. They would throw things at him. He got mugged and robbed. Like, he even wrote letters to the Pope about how he was just being treated terribly. Nobody was paying him tithes. And it's because he was a very strict stickler for the rules. He wasn't, mm-hmm. he was very rigid about it.
He was the hard ass.
Mm-hmm. And being that he was from England, he was already disliked by the Irish locals, right, you know? Like, yeah. So here he was in charge and telling them that their ways were wrong and that, like...
They already disliked
him.
What a dick.
So he made it his mission to bring Alice to justice for being a witch. And he's trying to bring charges against her for killing her last three husbands and slowly trying to murder her fourth. The stories went with these charges were that Alice had denied the Christian faith. She would use satire versions of Christian services, but she would do them for Satan instead. And it was even said that she was accused of using a robber's skull to make a broth. rooster's intestines, horrible worms, brains of unbaptized children.
What makes those worms
nails
so horrible?
No, I don't know, because it was like horrible certain worms. There are certain horrible worms. And I'm like, there's good worms? Like,
they're all worms are good worms.
But this is back in the 1300s or, well, yeah, the 1300s. So, like, maybe worms weren't off the menu. I don't know.
They were worms that had gone bad.
But so this is what was all in the soup, though, okay? It was rooster intestines, the horrible worms, brains of unbaptized children. I like how that's not even the big deal. It was like worms. And there was also fingernails or toenails of dead men were inside of it. Ooh. And Alice was also a demon lover to a demon named Robin Artisan, or always kind of known as Robin the Art, son of art.
Huh. Which it's a weird name for a demon.
Robin. The son of art. Like, like. So you're saying lover. A painter's child. Got it. Okay. And their lovemaking would be so rambunctious that Alice's maid, Petronilla, was forced to clean up after them. Ooh. Robin would show up in the shape of a cat, a black dog, or of a dark-skinned man with two accomplices holding onto pipes.
Okay. Wildly different. It's like some animals or three dudes.
Three dark-skinned dudes. Let's not forget that. This is a very, very white English countryside or Irish countryside, okay? So Alice still had some family in positions of influence and power and acquaintances that urged Richard to stop his persecution of Alice for witchcraft. Well, all that fell on deaf ears, because as far as Richard was concerned, the authority of God was far greater than the authority of man. So he wasn't going to stop with this, and he didn't care. Alice fled to Dublin, to which Richard responded by saying, "Fine, you left? Your son better show up in your place to court." That didn't go over well, because William Jr. had a lot of popular and influential friends, too. And so they ended up bringing along this guy named Arnold Lepore, who could have been a family member or could just been a popular last name. And he tried to put an end to all that legal nonsense. And by the end of the meeting with Richard, he like basically just threw him in jail and kept him in there until William's court date was done. And it's like, oh, now you can't send him into court. The date passed, but now you're free, so you can go.
Well, yep, what excuse?
Well, when the some of the sympathetic parishioners even tried to show up to offer Richard some food, and Arnold stopped them by saying that the bishop's not allowed any visitors. So Richard, pissed off, decided to write a letter demanding that the entire diocese be placed on an indirect, and this meant that everyone was temporarily banned from participating in sacraments and rituals. Well, not wanting Richard to, which, by the way, he had no authority to do. He was just a bishop. It's not like he was a pope or some cardinal or anything like that. He was just pissed, all right? So not wanting Richard to get the last word, Arnold invited everyone to come in and trash talk him and, like, explain how he was a horrible person to, like, and like, kind of paraded them around. Like, see, these people said that he was a jerk, too. Look at this. Go ahead. You got any crimes against him? Let's do it. So when Richard got out of jail, he set a new court date for William Jr. to appear, only to be rejected with a court date himself. So like when he went to go set a new court date, they're like, well, by the way, you have one. Because the king apparently heard about all the ruckus going on down here, and he wants to find out why there's being letters written banning everyone from doing, you know, sacraments and rites and rituals. So Alice, hearing that Richard was being charged, also then put in her own charges, saying he's harassing me and he's defaming me and he's got me unfairly excommunicated from the church. Well, nothing came of either lawsuit, because that's just how rich people bitch about things, is to set up lawsuits against each other.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's changed.
Alice then fled to England with her maid's daughter and lived there in exile until she passed. Her son William was accused of witchcraft and heresy, and he was in prison for a little bit, but upon his release, he had to attend 3 masses a day, and he had to replace a roof of a cathedral made of lead. So he had to make a lead roof for a cathedral, and that would be his...
Or pay to have it done.
Yes, pay to have it done. And, like, And then, funny enough, later on, the actual the cathedral roof collapsed in and destroyed the entire place.
Because you're making it out of lead. Yeah.
But that kind of plays more onto Richard. Like, that was his claim to fame of what he was, like, able to accomplish with this whole witchcraft, like, witch hunt. And it was, like, literally a lead roof that caved in. But anyways, the only person who was tortured and killed over this whole ordeal was the maid, Pertinella, because she was flogged until she gave a confession, which probably wasn't actually a confession, because she said that, yeah, she was the medium between...
There were three black guys.
Yeah, like, I was just there to clean up when they were done.
Like, well, it was cats, dogs, but plumbers.
She was the only one that was burned on the stake, and they actually have date. It's November 3rd, 1324, and she's known infamously as the first woman in Ireland to be tried and burned for witchcraft. The home of Alice is still around today, as the Keiteler House, and you can go there for a bite to eat or a little bit to drink. And just like the Daily Show, I'm going to give you your moment of zen, all right? The fact that Bishop Richard Ledready died in exile also. He ended up like, the church got so sick and tired of his batshit craziness, and they tried to move him around to make him happy, and nothing made him happy, so they just kicked him out.
Good.
And then he died.
Yeah.
With his collapsed cathedral roof.
Dick.
Dick. So I think the moral of the story is don't get with a rich man who has children.
Okay.
From a previous relationship, or at least make sure he includes them in the will, but like make their sums a little smaller.
Yeah, just like,
because if she wouldn't have just gone all in, or she would have just found some wealthy guys who had like no children.
Fair.
Or killed the children first. I don't know. But like the whole point is
the whole moral of the story, kill the children.
Leave the children luggage behind.
Yes.
So, Joe, what do you got?
All right. So for you today, I'm going to talk about the brazen head. Or really just autonomous heads that tell you secrets in general. Have you ever heard of that?
No, because when you said brazen head, I thought like people like basting.
Brazing?
Yeah, I thought like brazing isn't like, but like.
I don't know. I hear the meat on like faces, like the cheeks and stuff.
Yeah.
Really tender. You wouldn't need to braise
I've
that.
I've heard that too. So wait, go on with
that'd be more
heads.
Of a fried, you know, thing. Braising is for, you know, you gotta break down that tough meat.
So we use it for the buttocks.
No, so brazen, like. Actually, I forgot. I meant to look up kind of the
I know brazen
the etymology.
Means like bold.
Yeah, it can mean
really
that.
Brazen, they're bold.
Or like I have heard it in term and like related to brass or like metalwork stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that could be it, because this is literally what like it's said to be, a brass head, or at least in times that's how it's how it is described.
Are we talking about like a metal dildo?
No. Talking about an automaton.
I heard that.
You know, like, have you ever heard that term? It's basically like a self-operating machine. It's often like a phrase used for like early animatronics or clockwork, but you know,
still
when you talk
like
about
a dildo.
I don't know. I guess a dildo could kind of be an automaton.
Well, I mean, like, I guess a vibrator, because it's automatic, but you know.
So anyways. So the brazen head was like a legendary automaton, or basically like it was a concept that got applied several places. So it's generally said to have been a type of mystical object owned by like various medieval scholars.
Okay.
And essentially, all right. What it is it's a mechanical head that they built and imbued with some sort of like demonic thing or different things that you can ask it questions. It's kind of like the OG 8-ball. But it's just a talking head.
Oh, I like
or
this.
Or kind of.
Pee Wee Herman had something like that. It was that guy inside Mecca Lecca High, Mecca High Neo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like Big, you know, there's the the fortune teller.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, just the head.
Just the head.
So one such wizard, and kind of the most famous for having this, was a 13th century philosopher and Franciscan friar named Roger Bacon.
I've heard of Bacon.
And so he was Friar Bacon.
Yes!
I just had to laugh about that.
Friar Bacon.
So among his contemporary scholars, he was kind of known for like that weird dude possessing forbidden knowledge, kind of known as like a wizard. Like that was actually a word thrown around.
You're a wizard, Bacon.
Right. He was actually like the first guy to write in any European, like the first European mention of gunpowder.
Oh. So,
it was said that like one of his, he had a friend, another friar who had traveled.
Yeah, missionaries, you know.
Yeah. And so he brought back gunpowder and they're like playing with it in the monastery, I guess. So he's writing about that. So later in the 16th century, someone writes a story. It's an like no one knows who the author was. It's an anonymous story. It probably went around in like a pamphlet or something.
Okay.
Called The Famous History of Friar Bacon. I know.
Fry your own bacon.
And so in this, Bacon speaks to a demon through this automaton head he created for an experiment testing a theory that like speech is caused by an effusion of vapors. So he's kind of like trying to discover the origins of how speech works, and he created a whole head and wound up talking to a demon. Later, this was
still sounds like a sex thing. Like, I just needed to talk to someone. And, like,
I don't know.
I was lonely, so I made a head.
Yeah, I don't know about sex time, but yeah, it does sound like I just need someone to talk to. My peers are mean to me.
And then so, one day you just build a relationship with it because it's the only one that listens to you. And then you fall in love, and then you're fucking a head.
You know, I always pictured the head always seems to be masculine, so maybe not.
Maybe it's just like a coconut or a rough shape. I mean, we've seen, I won't say we, but I mean, I have seen stuff about like how creative
Spring has seen some things.
sometimes.
So later this was adapted for the stage by like his relatively famous playwright, Robert Greene.
Okay.
In the time, kind of, he was actually like a contemporary of Shakespeare, so like, okay. He was pretty famous for the time. I looked up some of the stuff he wrote, but like, unless you're really into mid-century like English plays, you wouldn't know.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Anyways, so he wrote this, The Honorable History of Friar Bacon and Friar Bongay. And actually, it became like one of the most successful Elizabethan comedies. So, and in this, it's similar in that he creates this head and it's imbued, like basically it's necromancy. It gets imbued with like a dead man's voice and he just talks to it. And then like it somehow like disintegrates, it like destroys itself. It's a common thing with some of these. Yeah, they're like,
once they serve
it's
their
too
purpose,
much power that it just like disintegrates kind of.
Nice.
Or it's some, it just gets destroyed. Either people hate it. We'll get to some of that.
Okay.
So, Robert Grosseteste was an English statesman from the 12th century who, I should say, Friar Bacon was 13th century. So this goes back a little bit. He was a statesman from the 12th century, English statesman, and he's said to have created this head of brass to tell him, like, divine secrets.
Okay.
And he took 7 years to create it. But then he lost it to 30 seconds of neglect, it said. So I looked into, I tried to find what happened to it. All I could find was basically that he looked away and it disintegrated. He neglected it for a second. But 7 years doesn't seem quite so bad compared to St. Albertus Magnus.
Albertus!
I don't know if Alberto listens to our podcast.
He should know.
So Albertus spent 30 years building a whole man of brass, actually. And
super lonely.
Well, he wasn't so lonely because he had friends around. We'll get to that in a sec. So apparently his creation was so astonishing and talkative that his disciple, St. Thomas Aquinas, the saint stuff, you know who he is. He destroyed it to shut it up.
No, he saw what Albertus was doing with it and was like, that's a sin!
He was jealous.
He was jealous.
He was like, dude, this guy created the coolest thing. Beat it to death.
Why don't you love me?
I know I'm in a weird place today. I should not have it's just like talking head, it's a sex doll.
Well, Just saying. Maybe different things speak to us.
So there's an account of a talking head appearing in about 1825 in the History of English Kings. And this head belonged to Pope Sylvester II, who was wild. Like, I went into a little bit of a rabbit hole with him. He lived, like, he was born in the, like, late 900s.
Way younger.
Mid 900s, and died just in 1003. So, he obtained this mysterious book, like this mysterious tome of secrets, when he traveled to El Andalus, which is basically modern day Portugal, but it was a Moorish, the Muslim kingdom. And he said that he stole this tome of knowledge from this like wizard, more or less.
Okay.
And the story of how he got it was kind of crazy. So like he went and hung out, and he was like, in real life, he's credited for like bringing back a bunch of math, like mathematical stuff. Yeah, he's a math dealer.
He's a math dealer.
So like the Moors were actually like responsible for a lot of the math we use today, and how it came to Europeans was actually a lot through this Pope Sylvester. I forget, he had a different name, like,
yeah,
as you know, popes take on a name. But anyway, so he went and this is before he was Pope. He went and he had traveled there, and he was hanging out with this wizard, and it said that he plied him with wine and relations with his daughter. And I couldn't get a clear description. I'm not sure whose daughter.
Did he
bring his daughter?
Yeah, as like another treat. Like, I brought some wine and my daughter.
Right? And so while the dude is sleeping, he steals this book and then takes off. And, like, it says that he escaped with help from, like, the devil or, like, demons. Yeah. And then one place I read, so the way he got away was because this wizard could track him.
Yeah,
if he was anywhere on the ground. And so he, like, hid out for a while, suspending himself from a bridge. But it was, like, something he learned in the book, I think. And that's what it sounded like they were saying. That's how it was aided by knowledge from the devil kind of thing. And so he steals this book.
Parkour is 100% the devil.
He steals this book, and he comes back, and he's kind of known as, like, a magician dude a little bit for a little while. And he winds up creating this head. And it can speak only, like, it'll answer yes or no questions.
Okay.
And so he used this fun magic book to make his own little talking head. Again, really...
Actually lonely.
Really seems like just a magic eight ball. So then there's the skull of Balsamo. And so this is actually more modern day, which is kind of, well, not modern day, but 1900s.
Okay.
So this was actually kind of fun. This was built by an illusionist, Josefi. I couldn't find a full name. It was just Josefi.
Some people are that famous. They only need one.
Right. And he was actually a distant relative of Sigmund Freud.
One, because that's Sigmund and Freud. They both just went by one name.
What? No, not Sigmund and what are the lion tamer dudes?
Yeah, it was Sigmund and Freud.
Wait, isn't Sigmund Freud the
Oh, you're talking to,
yeah.
Then what is the ones from the
Freudian?
Freud?
I don't know.
It was like something like Sigmund.
It was Sigmund and Roy.
Oh.
I was like, what? That's two namespring. The psychiatrist, the famous
Siegfried and Freud.
Siegfried. Sigmund Freud. Okay. Do you want me to edit that one out, Spring?
No, we can keep that. That's a very genuine moment.
Anyways, wow, yeah, that derailed me totally. Anyways.
Sigmund Freud, the psychology guy, not the lion.
Yeah. Yep. You know Sigmund Freud with the lions. They ate his face.
They were tigers.
Tigers. Oh, yeah. Excuse me for my mistake. All right. Anyways, let's get this back on track. So, Balsamo.
Balsic.
Or Josefi, the skull of Balsamo. Balsamic. So anyways, so he was an illusionist who toured around in the early 1900s. His skull was made of copper, and it had real human teeth. and a lace collar around its neck. He would sit it on a glass table or sometimes like position it on a chair or something, like yeah. if he was doing like parlor shows and stuff. Yeah. Just kind of like hanging out with the head. And it would like turn to look at people when they asked it questions. And it would respond by like chattering its teeth. And I don't know how you translated it, but it supposedly it could like pick, it could tell you what card you picked, and tell you what time it was, and it could answer all sorts of questions.
That only Giuseppe understood, right?
Yeah, Giuseppe.
Giuseppe, sorry.
So Giuseppe refused. He eventually like quit the illusionist game and became a mechanical engineer. He sounded like a pretty weird, smart dude. Yeah. I want to look more into him, actually. But so he refused to sell the skull.
Well, yeah, and the magician never gives away their yeah. secrets.
And he requested that it be destroyed upon his death. Ooh. Unfortunately, his friend Eugene Bernstein kept it.
Well.
And so the skull was passed down and eventually wound up in private collectors, private collections. In 1997, it was last seen when it was displayed at a conference for magic history.
Nice. I mean, horrible that they didn't honor his wishes, but cool. Like, did they find the cool little that string that it. Turned it into
They didn't
like,
say.
No.
So, while this last one is not an automaton, it's kind of badass. So, there was a wise talking head that Odin carried around.
Really?
This is the head of, yeah. This is the head of Mimir, or sometimes just Mim.
Okay.
Mimsy. That's what I call him. Anyways, he was renowned for his wisdom and knowledge. And unfortunately, in the Aesir-Vanir War, which a whole nother rabbit hole I went down. He lost his head. Someone chopped his head off. And Odin found his head and just carried it around. And it would recite secret knowledge and yeah. give him advice. So... That it's like, oh, damn it, my friend's head is lying there.
That reminds me, there was a scene inside of the zombie apocalypse for Marvel, and it was like the zombie guy was walking around with Deadpool's head.
Yeah,
because
I forgot
Deadpool's
about that.
Deadpool's head survived, but like he was just sitting there talking, and like the zombie guy just picked it up and just kept going with Deadpool's head under his arm. I gotta find that comic, but that was a really good story.
The head pops up a couple times, I remember.
But that's hilarious, because that's what it makes you think of, is like, Odin's just walking along, and there's Deadpool, just, you know. He's like, oh, wait, nice to see you again. Let's keep going.
I mean, there is the Norse stuff in the Marvel Universe.
Maybe it is Deadpool's head, and they just, like, he's just a reincarnate. Like, they just changed his name over time because, right. you know, Mim wasn't very popular anymore.
If they don't incorporate that whole, like, a reference to that, I'm going to be sad. I'll have to go back and find that. All
oh
right. Well,
gosh.
At that, we... Sigmund and Roy.
That is a genuine spring Siegfried. Moment right there.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Thank you guys for listening.
See you next week.
Bye.
Want to help us get into more ears? Help us grow by following, rating, and reviewing wherever you're listening. This is especially helpful in iTunes, so pop over and give us a rating if you can. You can follow us on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook as well. Feel free to leave any questions or comments.